This is the Blaze Radio On Demand.
Get a Casper mattress and get a great night's sleep. Try it for 100 nights risk-free. Go to Casper.com/Glenn and use the promo code Glenn. Get $50 towards the purchase of your mattress. Terms and conditions do apply.
Glenn Beck.
The Blaze Radio Network.
Hello, America, and welcome to Glenn. I am JP, and this is Jason.
We are, once again, we are minus the Glenn and a side of JP and Jason and the rest of Think Tank today. Glenn is actually in Canada, of all places. That's why that we're taking over
and
the boss.
He was like, you guys did such an amazing job last time.
Yeah.
He wants us to take over his show.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's really encouraging that we're taking over his show again. It's really good.
But yeah. No worries, because Glenn is back tomorrow. We have what's on tomorrow?
Tomorrow's show, we're going to do another history show.
Halloween episode?
Halloween, Edgar Allan Poe. It's really good. I just heard the finished product today, so it's really exciting.
Can't wait. And then the vault on Wednesday.
Yeah, the vault on Wednesday. And then Thursday, we've got part two of the TCU show, okay, which was really good last week.
And like last time, just because the boss is gone doesn't mean we don't have a ton of stuff to talk about. We're going to talk about what Russia's doing right now, how the Battle of Mosul is going on. Politiparker is in there getting ready. Just can't wait to give you an election update.
It's exciting.
That and a whole lot more right now. Okay, so I've been seeing a lot of misinformation going on about the Battle of Mosul right now. That's going down right now. Trump sent out a tweet saying that it was a disaster, that we telegraphed the attack, and it was going horrible. Basically, I don't know where he's getting that.
No, because didn't they say they were ahead of schedule?
They're ahead of schedule.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's things to worry about, obviously. So the reason that it's ahead of schedule is because most of ISIS forces pulled out of the villages around ISIL and they moved back into Mosul because they're getting ready for the actual assault. That's why it's ahead of schedule. Our forces are rolling in. There's nothing to see.
So they're preparing for a bigger assault coming from the Iraqi military?
ISIS
Like who is going after Mosul right now? Like, give us some of the specifics on that.
There's Turkey, which is a big deal. That's something we need to watch because Turkey's butting their heads into it. There's our forces who are advising the Kurds who are attacking on their own front, and our forces who are advising the Iraqi government. And then there's the Iranian militia units, which are kind of attached to Iraq, which is kind of worrisome. But they're all kind of converging at once. You can see how this is what scares me, is it's going to be a political nightmare. It's just going to be a total mess. As all of these different sectarian groups and, you know, ethnic groups are kind of fighting over the same spot. Mm-hmm. And actually, this is what delayed the op to begin with, because they didn't know how to divide Mosul up after all this was going down. So you can imagine the fight that's going to spring up after this happens. Like, is Iraq going to get control of Mosul? Are the Kurds, who have battled all the way up to the Mosul, you know, outskirts, are they going to be given all of that land? Or are those Shia militias going to come in and say, no,
who's going to make those decisions? Like, does the UN have to step in at all for that, or is that a...
I think that it'll be thrown pretty much all on Iraq, but I think it'll say, this is your sovereign territory, Iraq, you deal with it, and they'll have the final say-so. But the problem is that they're basically a puppet government of Iran now. So,
got it.
I mean, Iran and Iraq are kind of becoming this one entity.
Uh-huh.
It's scary. It really is.
Do you think this is going to lead to deeper U.S. involvement again, you know, because we still have a few thousand troops there, right?
Yeah.
And around 500 advisors or whatever.
I do think that it'll lead to us getting into it more than we really want to. It reminds me of the first American was actually killed, Chief Jason Finnan, 34 years old. He was killed. He was an EOD tech. He was killed while embedded with some other troops. He actually spotted an IED. I mean, the account of how it went down actually sounded pretty horrible, because he spotted the IED, radioed in, and the IED went off. So it sounded like, and then he got killed.
When did that happen?
It was over the weekend, I think, or Friday or over the weekend.
And so he, was he just an advisor that was there, or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they're basically kind of telling the Iraqis and the Kurds how to fight. And the more, I mean, so you'll have like maybe a team or more special forces embedded along with, you know, other countries, you know, militaries. So there, as far as they push up, our boys are right along in the front lines with them. I actually am more worried about what this means for the Christian minorities that are basically going to get left out again, it seems like. Our manners are horrible. I just wanted to welcome Andrew Chavarria again to the show.
Thanks, man.
Welcome, sir. What are you seeing in some of the, in churches, in your church, about how do they feel about, you know, the plight of the Christians now? And
well, I mean, you know, when we think about it from our perspective and we look at it from our church perspective, man, I take great hope and I encourage other people to take great hope, because one of the stories that we were going to talk about was the Christians that are retaking these cities that were taken over by ISIS. Mm. You know, I watched that video and it was really impressive to see, because, you know, and the reason I say I take hope from that is because here you got these people that literally had everything taken from them by radical Islamic terrorists. And they're going in, they're saying, we're not going to take it anymore. We want our place back. We want our land back. I remember watching the first time you guys went over to Iraq and you embedded with the Kurds, when, and you talked about this a little bit with me earlier, when they raised the cross back over the church. It was just, that was amazing. I mean, I bawled like a baby just to kind of see that, because it's like, you know, we don't think about that here. And we're facing, you know, language oppression. We're facing, you know, IRS threats and all of these things. But we don't really face those threats that they're facing over there. And they're willing to do everything that they have to do.
Yeah. I guess we'll tease this for the first time. I'm going over to Iraq next week, probably around Tuesday-ish, something like that. So be on the ground either Tuesday or Wednesday of next week. And we're going to embed back with that Christian group that was getting trained there in Telescuf. And there's a full-screen one that's Matthew Van Dyke. He's been out there, and he's been training some of the Nineveh Plain forces. And him and his men have basically been trying to teach them. These are like shop owners. You know, these are just regular dudes that are now, you know, kind of brought in to be citizen soldiers. And he's trying to basically from the ground up teach them how to fight. Yeah. Do we have a VO3 that we can show? That's Van Dyke and his Sons of Liberty International teaching them how to fight. There they are. I mean, they literally did not know how to march. They didn't know how to shoot.
Volunteer?
Volunteer. Yeah. So the absolute definition of citizen soldier. And these guys are based. These are the champions of the faith right now. These guys are on the front lines. They're the only ones that are, you know, holding back ISIS from their lands. Lands that have been Christian for a couple thousand years.
Yeah.
I mean, really.
Incredible.
I mean, but
to be fair, I didn't know how to march when I joined the military.
Yeah, I didn't either. It's an acquired skill.
it really is. Like, that looks really simple, like what they're doing on there, but that's really hard stuff. It's not.
But it brings into mind, though, I mean, I don't know. I mean, what is, as Christians, what should we be? Should most of our work back here and around the world be in prayer? Should it be financially, by donating to groups such as Van Dyke, who's helping these people? By the way, his website's Sons of Liberty International .com, I believe. But they have a financial contribution section, so if you want to give directly to them, you can.
Yeah.
Should we be more actively involved in supporting, you know, these, you know, basically Christian militias is what they are, to go out and, you know, take their lands back?
I've already been criticized for saying this before, but one of the things that I started saying probably about a year ago was the time for prayer is over. It's time for action. Mm. You know, not that prayer doesn't, you know, prayer does big things. It does powerful things, right? I firmly believe that. But the time for prayer in matters like this, it's over with. We have to act now. You got to be willing to put your money where your mouth is. You know, Abraham prayed to God. God answered, but he still had to get up and go into a land that he didn't know. Mm-hmm. You know, all of those, you know, prayer takes action. And, you know, that's my answer today is, you know, it's time to stop praying, get up and do something about it.
Yeah, I think, well, a lot of it had to do with, I mean, what we've seen also is some of the cool stuff with M1 also. Yep. Some of the stuff they're doing over there, Van Dyke, you know, Samaritan's Purse, a lot of other ones that have just, but, you know, I think giving also, you know, giving money, because all of us can't go over there, you know, like,
yeah.
you know, I couldn't go over there technically because I don't really know how to handle a battle situation. You've been in the military. You've been in the military. You would at least have an idea of what it's like. So, yeah, when it comes to action, I think you're right. You know, it's that time of prayer, you know, continues, but it's we have to show it. You know, we have to act it.
Does anybody here go to a smaller church? Like, I go to a larger church. You go to a larger church.
My church is smaller.
Yours is smaller?
Yeah.
Well, Bowie, do you go to a smaller church or a larger church?
Not in Dallas, no. My church in Chattanooga is pretty small.
Are they? What do they say? Do they have? Are they vocal about it? I mean,
No, not really. I mean, well, a pastor actually just moved to Detroit to kind of pastor to a Muslim community there. So I guess in a way, they're kind of, you know, bringing in these kinds of issues. But I think for a lot of people, I mean, donating money is great. But I think for a lot of people, prayer is action. Yeah. And so we can say, you know, stop praying and act. But for a lot of people, that's all that they can do is pray.
Yeah.
What about you, Nathan?
Yeah, I don't think that Americans in general, there's not a lot of education about this issue. You know, we're not used to Christians being talked about in a minority sense,
right?
Usually, you know, and I think it would surprise a lot of people that there are even Christian communities in Iraq, you know, that have been there for a couple thousand years, as you said. I think that would surprise some people, you know. I don't think there's a lot of education about what they're facing and what they're fighting for. What do you think, as far as Mosul goes, how do you see this going down, Jason, ultimately?
You mean like...
the battle for it?
The result afterwards?
Yeah.
Well, so the reports came out over the weekend that ISIS was already... They were all the villages they're vacating, they're bringing all those civilians, and so many of these are Christian as well, because a lot of these areas around Mosul are Christian villages. They're bringing all the civilians out of the villages, and they're putting them in the city. The reason they're doing that is because they're gearing up for the final assault. Basically, they want meat shields is what they want, to put it very crudely. They're already also starting to destroy major parts of the city because the city is a lot, and you probably know this too, a city is very hard to defend, and it's also very hard to defend if there's a lot of rubble and stuff. It makes house to house, street to street, hard to attack because they are dug in. It's going to be very bloody. Mm-hmm. It's going to take a while, and it's going to be very bloody.
Have they surrounded the city? So could ISIS find a way out? Or
there is a corridor out, and ISIS is defending that corridor now because that's like their only supply line to get in, so they can replenish themselves with food, water, and all that stuff. And there's already been, I saw, it was a couple of us were laughing at this the other day. There's already ISIS defectors that are trying to get out. They're dressing up as women. I wish we had that photo.
That was pretty great.
They're dressing up as women.
In like little princess dresses.
And
they still have their full uniform on under it.
It literally was like a princess outfit.
It didn't make any sense.
The beards are always suspicious.
Yeah, the beards are little
dead
off.
Giveaway.
There's a Halloween superstore over there?
Yeah, I know.
but I see it as taking a long time, and I see it as I see casualties as being very, very high.
So is the one thing keeping everybody from just flattening the city, are there still civilians in there?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so that's what's holding them back.
And it's disputed, too, is however many are actually there. Like, I've seen anywhere from, because I know a lot of people vacated, so I know it's just kind of up in the air. But I've also seen how there's speculated numbers from anywhere from 250,000 all the way up to over a million people. Jeez. There is a ton of people there. Yeah. And it's funny, they're running propaganda ops on their own people while this is going on. They're kind of doing like a Baghdad Bob, saying, the coalition's not here, they're not, you know, come on, everything's fine. They obviously know better. They started closing down their shops, but ISIS is making them reopen their shops, saying nothing is wrong.
Really?
Basically, they want people out and about. They don't want them hunkering down, because if they hunker down, then the coalition can bomb them from overhead.
Yeah.
So all signs point to them using this city as a gigantic meat shield, and they're just going to soak up casualties. Mosul will fall. It will fall, and it'll go back eventually. The question is, what's going to be left?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, what is going to be left?
Because it's rumored al-Baghdadi is there, right?
Yeah, that was a rumor. But the Iraqi government put that out there.
Oh, they did?
Yeah. So, and
is it still going to be a big deal, though? Like, will it hurt ISIS taking that city over? Like, will it really attack them?
So it's going to hurt them from a propaganda standpoint.
Okay.
Because there's not much of the caliphate left if all they have is Raqqa and a couple of oil fields in Syria. You know, all of a sudden, like, their big thing was they dissolved borders and they opened up this big caliphate, you know, and created their own country, basically. And you can't, it's hard to say that after they've lost everything in Iraq. They'll still be fine. They have a stronghold in Raqqa. They're going to, they're going to keep on going. They are not fully on the ropes. They're completely dug in. So the ISIS is nowhere near to being completely done. So we still have a long way to go, and unfortunately a very long and bloody battle ahead of us.
Bui?
All right, so who here heard about the AT&T Time Warner deal?
Yeah, I did. That's crazy.
So AT&T wants to buy Time Warner, $85 billion.
It's not a lot.
No, it's pocket change. So they have to go through, regulatory issues if it will be passed or not. That could take up to a year, but the CEOs of both companies were on CNN this morning, sounded pretty confident, basically because it's not a horizontal integration, it's vertical. It's, a distribution company acquiring a content company rather than, two distribution companies merging or something. But I don't know, I think it's pretty interesting, especially in, I don't know if you guys know, but in the 1940s, all the movie studios had their own movie theaters. Mm-hmm. And so that eventually was overturned by the Supreme Court. And it seems kind of similar to me, a distribution company and content companies merging. Mm.
So will this have any effect on Time Warner Internet? Because it sucks. At all?
Well, you might have exclusive content, I guess, to...
Oh, okay, got
or
it.
Or AT&T.
Yeah.
No, wait, Time Warner, like the internet and cable, that's different.
Yeah. No, Time Warner, internet. So it's different than, this is just distribution.
This is a personal question.
It is, yeah. It's a personal question. Personal. Yeah.
Yeah, that's different from Time Warner, like the content.
The distribution,
company,
okay.
Right?
So what?
Because
all...
that Time Warner is now owned by Charter.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Right.
And that also includes HBO, right?
Yeah, like HBO, TBS, TNT,
CNN,
Warner Brothers, Studios.
And AT&T.
Well, it already is all one. All of those is right under Time Warner. The difference is that AT&T.
Time Warner owns HBO, CNN, Cartoon Network, TNT, TBS, CW, Warner Brothers Pictures, DC Entertainment, and the Warner Brothers Studios.
Yeah. Wow. So
what does AT&T want with them?
That would be maybe they get rid of because does AT&T still have their cable?
Their U-verse.
Yeah, their U-verse. Yeah. I wonder if they'll just get rid of it and then all those stations will be on their internet package.
Well, AT&T, they also took over DirecTV.
So it can provide better bundle deals. Yeah. They were talking about how this is kind of the first time that a mobile network can now have all of that content exclusively owned by them, which is what a lot of people think is moving towards.
So does everyone agree that is this something that should be taken up by Congress, Supreme Court, go through all the process?
Mm-hmm. It's possible that, it's a rigorous regulatory examination, and they could have restrictions still put on them. It's not a total done deal.
Are they included because of the FCC? Why are they involved in that?
There's just a lot of antitrust issues, but... The model they're going after is when Comcast bought out NBC Universal back 5 years ago, 2011.
Yeah, I think it was 2010.
Yeah. So, but basically, what they're doing is Comcast was a distributor, AT&T is a distributor, and Comcast decided to get into the content business as well by acquiring NBC Universal. Mm-hmm. So AT&T to compete with Comcast is now doing the same thing by taking out Time Warner. Which they're trying to edge out Verizon by doing that because Verizon doesn't have content. They're still a distributor.
Right. This is
so it's the merging of distributors and content creators into one.
Right, which is what happened in the 40s and was overturned by the Supreme Court. Because.
And what I was reading was there was a lot of people who aren't happy with how regulators handled the Comcast-NBC Universal merger, so there might be a lot more pushback with AT&T and Time Warner than there was 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
This
is going to be a big deal going forward, I think, because you're starting to see these media mega companies. Right. We've had a problem with this with The Blaze before, because if there's like a group, if there's a channel or a network or whatever that doesn't want to cover you because of your political views or whatever, mm-hmm. they can just deny you on their network. Right. So now we have these companies that are like AT&T now. Literally, they can whether they're right or left or whatever, they can just cut out one entire side of the argument and just roll whatever they, whatever.
It's interesting that a lot of this, that they're wanting to get into this content business, a lot of that seems to be fueled by Netflix and Amazon, mm-hmm. that are now producing their exclusive original stuff. You have to go to them to get those particular shows or whatever.
I don't think I don't think that we're ready for this, the digital age going forward. I really don't. It brings to mind, did you guys notice on Friday, the DYN hack? Did y'all hear about that?
Yes. Yeah.
So just to recap, there was a group of, actually, they don't even know who did it. Of course, in the very beginning, they said the hack, or it's actually a cyber attack, was so large, they thought it might be like a nation state, like Russia or someone that did it. Mm-hmm. But basically what it was, DYN is, and I don't understand all the technicalities of this, but DYN is like, I guess they're a company that has in charge of like infrastructure for the internet. Mm-hmm. So they like, I guess they're kind of like the yellow pages for the internet. So like if something happens to DYN, Twitter goes down, you know, New York Times went down, all these different websites just go down and it becomes unavailable. Well, what they did was, whoever did this, they attacked things that run on the internet. So like, say your coffee pot, if you have it, you know, or your refrigerator now, if it's attached to the internet, your cameras, your security system, all that stuff. They infiltrated and put malware into all that stuff. And they set up to like, what, like 15 million devices or something like
that
were attacked. Okay. It was just it could have been some of our own devices at our houses were infected with this thing. And at one point, they all just like dumped all this code into DYN and overloaded it so it couldn't start. You know, it couldn't continue.
Which really goes back to a conversation we had, I don't know, a few weeks ago or something about nuclear weapons isn't the first strike anymore. It's a cyber attack. First strike now.
It would debilitate this country.
Yeah.
So I saw speculation this could have been a practice run for Election Day. What do you think about that?
Well, so that's a good point because this was a warning straight up. Because if they really wanted to hurt us, they would have targeted something legit like hospitals. Mm-hmm. Or power grid.
Are you saying Netflix isn't legit?
For many, yes. Okay, yes, it is. But no, yeah, totally. This was either a probing or a warning, either or. And actually, it serves as both.
Same purpose, yeah.
Yeah, it was both probing.
Educated guess, who was it?
Man, the WikiLeaks thing just happened. So I heard a rumor that they said they were mad that Assange had his internet cut. And they think that it's U.S. direct involvement with that?
I think I'm kind of on the other side, conspiracy theorist, of, like, this is just a dry run.
Yeah.
For Election Day?
Well, for something bigger. My birthday, possibly.
Cutting out Netflix. A few months ago, in an interview, the head of the CIA, you know, was asked what keeps him up at night, and this was the thing that he mentioned, was cybersecurity.
Yeah.
He said that's where we're most vulnerable, so...
Well, it's like, literally, we're not prepared for it. I mean, we literally aren't. Like, you have your virus scanner on your computers at home or whatever. But those only work on known, you know, it scans for stuff they already know about. Mm-hmm. Now, if there's a nation state out there, let's say Russia, China, whoever else, they're going to write something completely unknown.
Yeah.
You know, something that's not covered in most virus scans. And they'll just dump it out on the internet. And literally, and just sit there and wait for, a time to do it. Supposedly, have you guys ever seen that... that documentary about Stuxnet and how we attacked Iran. Mm-hmm. They said that through means like this, basically, they've already fully infiltrated Iran. Stuxnet was nothing compared to what they'll do now. Wow. But you got to figure that they also have us on that. So this right here is just a straight up, example of...
To go with what you were saying, Bui, earlier this morning I was watching some stories talking about these people, voter registration. Voter registration has been compromised in some states because of this hack.
Well, really quick, there's a story that came out of Oklahoma over the weekend of, I know, Oklahoma. Some Russian officials wanted to be there on Election Day to just follow the process and how things work.
Didn't they want to do that last election?
They wanted to do it last time, and then Oklahoma, the Secretary of State there, he said, it's a truly amazing system, and he said, you can watch it on TV.
So I saw this over the weekend, and just look at this Russian aircraft carrier.
Oh, man.
It's billowing, belching smoke.
It's burning?
And it's using, like, diesel engines or something like that. It's going through the English Channel right now as a show of force. It's the head of an eight-ship flotilla, and they're headed right now to the Med to bulk up their forces over off
Syria. Oh, man, they got one of those helicopter things? We don't have those,
yeah,
do we?
Yeah, I wonder if it actually
That's
runs.
Crazy.
This cracked me up, man. It's like they've been talking about this fleet moving since it left like a week ago or so. And they were like, oh, my gosh, the biggest Russian flotilla since the Cold War. And how spooky it sounded. But literally, it's kind of funny. The Russian Navy sucks. It straight sucks. This is,
I feel like you're just trash talking right now.
This aircraft carrier, literally, it's known to break down so much that it travels with its own tugboat right next to it.
Wow.
To basically keep it going. It's so hilarious. But literally, Russia, the Russian fleet is so bad. I think they have like one aircraft carrier. Just that's their only aircraft carrier right there. It can barely move. It runs off a diesel engine. This is like 30 old tech.
But they have a lot of other military in the ocean, right? They have like 10 submarines.
No, they really don't. Their navy is not great. There's one dominant navy in the United States, and that's the United States Navy. And we have about 10 aircraft carriers, as per Political Parker over there.
He stepped out and became Military Parker.
Yeah. It's actually 10. We have more aircraft carriers in the world combined. China has one, but it's not serviceable. It's not in use yet. Wow. Russia has this one, which travels the world with its own tugboat because it's always breaking
down.
So
I don't understand it. Why are we afraid of Russia?
Well, nuclear weapons, pretty much.
Okay.
But we have those too.
Yeah. Well, they're the only one that can actually directly counter us, and we can destroy each other at the same time.
Oh.
And their lands, they have considerable
force. So maybe you should stop trash talking their navy.
Putin is.
I'm going to trash talk that navy all day long. I mean, come on. That's
but
ridiculous.
Why haven't they or China grown? Like, why do they not build more? Because obviously, at sea has been, you know, something that we've used for decades and decades.
Well, we're able to do it because we have the largest economy in the history of man, and we've been able to build this since, you know, the 1950s, mm-hmm. basically. It's not an easy thing to do. And they don't even have the doctrine to keep these navies going. Even if they suddenly decided to build up a ton of ships and deplete their economies, they don't even really know how to operate large fleets. We're actually in an incredibly unique position. We're the only global power that's ever existed like this. And that's how far away we are from these countries. It's not even close, really.
So why then, Jason, does the world look at us as so weak over the past, I don't know, 8 years?
Weak leadership. You know, I mean, really, it's, you know, weak leadership.
Do we ever show our force at all?
No.
Besides maybe inauguration?
Our force?
Yeah, like our military force. When do we ever actually show it off?
I mean, like in parades or something like that? Or... I mean,
why do we not go like every other brands? Country does it? Why don't we?
Because we don't have to.
We're basically the only country that is in almost every single country in the world. You know what I mean? We have so many allies. We have bases all over the world. We're the only country that's ever done this, really. Yeah. I mean, our show of force is daily operation, military operations. It really is. We're that dominant. But anyway, forget this. Do you have an election update, Caleb?
What do you got?
Yes, but I first want to address the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
Yes, me and Nathan are wearing the same shirt today. And yes, we called each other
nerd
this morning.
Hey, Bowie and Jason are wearing almost the same coat as well.
It's true.
Crud. He's wearing a shirt. And I'm wearing a jacket.
Wow, and there it is.
Okay, so, election update.
Back to that update.
It better be good, because I'm tired of the election.
There's 14 days left.
Yes.
It's almost over. Latest polls have... So, 538 did this interesting thing where their forecast is based on multiple simulations run every day, like hundreds of simulations. But to get a likelihood of where things are going to end up on election day, they ran 20,000 simulations to get their numbers. And right now they have four outcomes that they perceive happening: a Trump win, a narrow Clinton win, a Clinton win in the Obama zone, so the same margins he won in 2008 and 2012, and then a Clinton landslide. And their percentage breakdown, if you just look at the polls right now, is a 13% chance that Donald Trump pulls out a narrow victory, either with the popular vote and the Electoral College or without the popular vote and the Electoral College. But either way, he wins in a narrow. His win would be very narrow. They have a 13% chance that Clinton wins in a 1 to 2 point, you know, with a 1 to 2 point margin. They have a 31% chance she wins in a 4 to 7 point margin, and a 43% chance she wins in an 8+ point margin, which would be a landslide at that point.
Gosh, but I'm confused. So... Drudge says that Trump's up 2 points.
No, I thought it was 6 last time.
I'm confused because the whole election's rigged, so does it really
matter? It's all rigged.
That's why I think it's important to point out, because...
That it's rigged?
Barring... To quote John Heilman from a couple weeks ago, barring Hillary getting hit by a bus, like, she's going to win.
Yeah.
And what people need to realize is, it's not that the election is rigged. It's that a majority of America is going to collectively throw up in their mouths and pull the lever for her over him, because they'll take corrupt over crazy any day.
Yeah. But literally, Trump's only offense right now is saying that the election's rigged and that the media is rigged against him. And weren't you just talking about that, Nathan?
Yeah, there's a Washington Post editorial last week. The headline, it says, "Inside Donald Trump's Very Dangerous Strategy to Discredit the Media." And, of course, it seems like we've heard nothing but this for the last couple of weeks. You know, a tweet from a week ago that he said, "The election is absolutely being rigged by the dishonest and distorted media pushing crooked Hillary." And that's just, you know.
He ain't wrong, though, on that, though.
Yeah.
I hate to disagree with the guy, but I mean, and we're to agree with the guy, but CNN, we talked about this, is nonstop. Where's WikiLeaks on CNN and MSNBC?
And yeah. The media was pushing for Trump during the whole primary season.
So that he would win, and then it would be a, you know, landslide victory for Hillary.
I don't think it's news that the media is rigged.
No. But, yeah. I mean, you make a good point, though. They were all on his side to set up what we have now, this debacle. They were all, they almost handed him the nomination.
Well, they all would say, gosh, it's great to have, you know, America's saying to have somebody from the outside is great for the Republican Party. And then now they're saying, golly, this was idiotic of the GOP, and those people were horrible.
Well, a lot of people are saying, look, we need someone with experience to do this job. The only way. But what's hilarious is in 2008, during Obama's election, I remember tons of them were saying, look, experience is not that big of a deal.
Oh, yeah.
I
mean, yeah.
You know, he'll do fine.
An interesting question is Trump pushing this narrative because after the election, the only media source you'll be able to trust is Trump TV.
This is true.
If Trump was up by 6 points, he wouldn't be talking about this at all. You know,
This is
clearly talk from somebody who's about well behind and needs something to save face because, you know, he's about to lose big.
Yeah,
I think
he's only within the margin of error.
He's about to lose bigly. Yeah.
Yeah. He's within striking distance bigly. In Texas. No, Hillary's within striking distance in Texas. Hillary's within striking distance in Utah. She's in striking distance within Arizona. You can't lose this many categories and carry. You can't be down in this many categories and win the election. It's like we said this morning. It's the fourth quarter, 2-minute warning. You're down by 3 scores, and you have no timeouts left.
All right, so James Brennan is a philosopher.
Oh, I love him. He's great.
Puts forward an interesting idea that I will just start by saying I don't completely disagree with. So his whole premise is that America should become an epistocracy, which is basically a representative democracy with some improvements. And that improvement is that votes can be weighted based on your knowledge.
Oh,
horrible.
How about it?
Totally disagree with that.
Well, and that's not the whole thing,
okay,
though. Here's
his point. That politicians have to cater to the median voter, which is why so much crap gets passed, is because the median voter barely knows anything. The median voter can barely pass, like, poli-sci basics, or economic basics. So by giving, and the reason is that because they feel no incentive to become knowledgeable because they feel like their vote doesn't matter, which is true. Honestly. And so, by giving people the incentive to become knowledgeable, you know, if you pass the, American citizenship test, which we already use, it's
and none
fair.
Of us at this table could pass.
That is such a lie. I took a practice test last night.
Yeah, that's not true, actually.
You took the test last night?
I did. It's very easy.
It would not be easy
for a lot of people. And so, if people have the incentive to become more knowledgeable, then, and the incentive is you're vote could be weighted more, then we have a population of smarter
true story,
people.
I actually took one of those because I was trying to teach people within the Hispanic community that it's really easy to start going through this process and actually obtain. And I thought it was going to be hard. It's pretty easy.
I'm probably basing this off of the David Barton one that he has.
Yeah.
Because he had one of like 100 questions and even he couldn't answer it, all of them.
Well, okay. this
so that's like 50 years old.
In essence,
I only
took
the practice test, to be fair.
In my opinion, this kind of sets up elitism.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like, there was an article recently that Caleb and I were reading in Cracked Magazine, of all places, that talked about how there was this huge divide between people that lived in smaller rural areas, basically most of the country, you know, in the middle, and then the elites in the big cities on the coasts. So basically, in my opinion, that just increases that divide. I mean, there's people that, there's farmers that live in Idaho or something like
that. They're not aware of that.
Their vote means just as much as anybody else's.
But are you saying that a farmer in Idaho doesn't have the mental capacity to take the test and earn that extra weight?
No, I'm saying that his vote means just as much as someone that went to college. Right. He doesn't have to go to college. He went to the University of Hard Knocks, and
now he's a great
farmer. This
kind of comes down to the same issue that we had with women not voting. Like, it's almost going back to that, saying women should not have the right to vote because they were treated differently, they were lower class.
At first, I had a real problem with this concept of a test, but when you think about things like, you know, you have to pass a driver's test to drive, it doesn't sound so unreasonable, you know, to expect that if you're going to go vote, that you have some basic knowledge of things, you know. And the citizenship test, as an example, is actually, it's quite easy. I mean, they give you the questions to study, and you only have to answer 10 of them, and you only have to get 6 of the 10 right. I mean, it's a very low bar.
So if you're saying that your right to vote makes you an equal citizen, well, 20% of our population do not have the right to vote.
But no, we're born in America.
Kids 17 and younger don't have the right to vote, so are they not equal parts of society? Should they be?
In defense, I would say this. I'd rather my 7-year-old daughter vote than some people in college today.
So then you guys are telling me that there are people out there. Yes, there are people that are uninformed, but are we to say they don't have a right? So we're taking away a right from somebody that they were born in a country and given a right.
And can I build off of his point? The ultimate job of informing oneself goes to that individual.
Right.
But it's our job in the media to make that as easy as possible. We fail at that a lot.
Yeah,
sure.
Like, a lot. Yes, ultimately, it is the person casting their ballot's responsibility to be informed on the issue. But we hold the responsibility as people in the media to help them do that. But I just think the right to vote is a little bit more fundamental than your right to drive. It is an inherent right in living in a...
I mean, that's why our forefathers created it this way.
Yeah.
Like, we
it's just a very slippery slope once you go down restricting...
Yeah. And speaking of forefathers, what they actually wanted, they didn't intend for politics to become what it is now.
No, not at all. Yeah,
I mean, this is taking that to the next level.
No, but
they really didn't. Like, that's the point of the entire point of representative, you know, representative democracy.
At the
same
time...
If you're, like, in a, you know, like, let's say if you're that farmer in Idaho or whatever, well, there is a guy that is going to handle that for you and represent your issues. Now, you don't need to take a test on how the Supreme Court works, you know, to be able to elect that official.
In defense of the Founding Fathers, though, I mean, that's really essentially why we have the Electoral College, though. They didn't do a just straight-up popular vote from the start because there were those rural farmers who had no clue what was going on. And they had an excuse because there's no telegram, there's no, you know, they
Well, the Electoral College was, the basis for the Electoral College was more that the founders knew that the history of direct democracies, like Rome and Greece, failed all the time. Mm-hmm. And the Electoral College was more their buffer to make sure mob rule never happened.
Right.
So we've got Halloween coming up a week from today.
Yes.
And tomorrow, as we said at the open, Edgar Allan Poe on the History Show. It's going to be pretty scary. Glenn goes down into his dungeon. Anyways, there's a story coming out of the University of Florida. It came out a few weeks ago. We hadn't had a chance to talk about it yet. And Bowie says that she sent this story first off, but I actually think I did. But that's another controversy for another day.
Bowie sent it first.
Oh. University of Florida students offered counseling for being offended by Halloween costumes. Here's the thing that they said. Some Halloween costumes reinforce stereotypes of particular races, genders, cultures, or religions. Regardless of intent, these costumes can negative stereotypes, causing harm and offense to groups of people. UF administration said in a blog post, if you are troubled by an incident that does occur, please know that there are many resources available.
Well, I'm already talking to HR because Jason said he's going to bring in a sombrero next week. So.
And he's half Hispanic.
I'll quit. I'm going to cancel my subscription from the Blaze.
I mean, this is just crazy.
What I've seen is like costume, not culture, is the popular phrase season.
One of the ones that they're talking about banning, of course, is an Ebola one, which somebody dressed up as a nurse and had like blood over them. But that's something that you would see. We saw it last year at
Halloween.
There's
always like distaste, distasteful costumes, right. But I think...
But do you really need counseling?
Well, like, now you can't be, like, an Indian, like a Native American.
Right.
Which I feel like used to be a popular kids' costume,
right?
Because that's culture.
Yeah, Cowboys and Indians. But then also, you know, the Village People, that was a big Halloween one. I can't say that without a straight face.
Look, I'm offended by what people wear, like, 90% of the day.
Yeah.
You know, on days that aren't Halloween. You know, like, you really probably shouldn't wear that.
But you don't have to, like, I mean, you don't really have to call a hotline to feel better about it.
No, no,
we,
I don't.
We should, though.
We are a country of wusses now,
yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah.
You know what we need is we need to clone or actually create Clint Eastwood's character from Gran Torino. And just mass produce that character out all in every city.
Yeah.
All right, we got a This Day in History?
This Day in History, yes. Western Union completes the first transcontinental telegraph line. You know, sometimes you don't think that things were going on during the Civil War, but this actually was completed just a few months into the start of the Civil War. But obviously very important for communications and technology in America. And another history-related item is Hillary. There is significance to her wearing white, as you
really?
May or may not know. Yes, it has to do with the suffragette movement. It came from Great Britain in 1908. They wore white for purity. That was one of their traits.
Oh, look, there she is.
Wait.
And then you can see Hillary decided to wear white in all her big moments. The night she clinched the Democrat nomination, which you see right now. The night she gave her acceptance speech at the Democrat National Convention.
That's the last debate.
And then she wore white at the last debate.
That's smart.
She looked like a Heaven's Gate preacher or something.
She really
like
did in the last one.
I think looking at it, it's kind of like her closer outfit. Every time she's trying to make like a closing argument or something, she wears white.
She looks like
I'm pretty
Kim
sure
Jong-un.
Betty Hinn wore the same thing.
That's a weird thing. She's going to take her jacket off and start nailing people with it.
But there's some historical.
Yeah, explain a little bit exactly like why they did that.
The suffragette movement, that was just trying to get women the right to vote. Started in England the early 1900s. And eventually, of course, made its way over here. Now, it didn't start after Great Britain. It was going on here as early as the 1840s, but took a long time to get there.
So why is she championing that? I mean, are women, they're just so oppressed in the United States today.
I'm pretty sure, is it her?
100%. Look how underrepresented I am right now.
Isn't it the Clinton Foundation that paid their women 30% less than the men?
Yep.
Something like that, yeah.
Yep. I mean, let's... If you really want to talk about suffrage, let's talk about maybe you should, you know, walk the walk and pay the women more. Let's ask for that. You know, it's just if you want equal white rights, then let's do it in
equal
your own whites.
Equal whites.
I was thinking white dress.
Elmer Fudd in the house.
Equal whites. But yeah, that's just crazy.
The glass ceiling is fully intact in our own foundation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good gosh. Huh. And another interesting thing about, back to your Western Union thing, that's also Western Union was the first company to get caught and documented proof of them colluding with the government to spy on their own civilians.
That's right. What were we talking about?
Happened in the 1800s.
Wow, there was sabotage as they were building this, by the way. Native Americans, the Sioux, in fact, cut the line and used some long stretches of it to make bracelets.
Really?
And then later some of them got sick, yes, and their medicine man said that they had offended the great wire talking gods and that they should stop cutting the line. So they were able to finish it. Yeah.
Wow. That's crazy.
That is crazy.
Gosh, the 1861?
1861,
yeah. It's just amazing to me how far we've come. About this DOIN attack and everything else now. I mean, it's not really that much time has gone by.
That explains the hack. We offended the wire talking gods.
Yeah, that is very true.
Explains the hack.
There you have it. Exactly. Yep. Andrew, something you don't know, but this is the third role of Think Tank.
Yep.
This is your first time on Think Tank. Yep. You have to be the one to give the prayer.
Let's do it.
So, all right.
Let's do it. Father God, we just thank you for this day that you've given us. We thank you for all of the blessings that you provide. And this time, Father, we just want to lift up our nation and we want to continue to be voices of truth, Father, voices of reason in the midst of all of this chaos that's taking place. We pray, Father, that we are able to see your hand through the storm and that we might be able to feel the calm, be still, and listen for when you are there. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
Glenn Beck.
The Blaze Radio Network.
The key to having a great day starts with having a great night's sleep, and I know because I have a Casper mattress. The Casper mattress was invented with two high-tech foams that give you all of the support that you need and guarantee that you get the best night's sleep ever. Time magazine named Casper mattress one of the best inventions of 2015. Casper ships for free in a box so small you won't believe it holds the actual mattress, making it simple to get from your front door to your bedroom. And you try it for 100 nights risk-free. They'll come and pick it up if you don't love it as much as I love mine. And they'll refund every single dime. Once you try it, you're never going to want to sleep on anything else. Having a great day by having a great night's sleep. Casper.com/Glenn. Use the promo code Glenn. $50 off the purchase of your mattress at Casper.com/Glenn. The promo code is Glenn. Don't forget, $50 off the purchase of your mattress. Casper.com/Glenn. Terms and conditions do apply.